Welcome to Tuned In, KWBG's News and Public Affairs program. And now here's your host, News Director Jim Turbin.
Today on Tuned In, we have on the phone line with us U.S. Senator Charles Grassley, and an opportunity to visit with the senator, and an opportunity for listeners to call in during the program, 432-1590, if you would like, and pose a question or a topic for the senator to answer. Senator, first of all, thanks for taking time to visit with us.
I'm glad to be with you. I got back from Iowa last night about 8:30. The plane landed on time. I had a chance on to do four things over the weekend. Number one, I attended a Boy Scout encampment in Coralville. I attended a what you might call a freedom and patriotic program that was, I think, in its 26th year, because they said the person, the adult leader that led it there for the Waterloo Christian School, was retiring after this year. So I hope they find somebody to have the same program. I've been going almost every year. And then I had an opportunity to do a political thing with the Iowa Republican Party at their Lincoln event in Des Moines Thursday night, in which I think 11 Republican candidates for the presidency talked to each one for 10 minutes.
I know that I was going to ask you, that was one of the things I was going to ask you about, because there are a lot of candidates, a lot of interest, and I know that you kind of watch this and see how it's going, but there definitely is an interest in a lot of different people to pick from and to follow along with,
yeah,
too. Is it exciting to see that much interest?
It's exciting to see that much interest. That's the very positive side of it. The negative side is, how in the heck do you have debate on television when you have a dozen candidates and maybe even more than that? We've only got six announced candidates, but we have another 10 that are talking about getting into the race. And the Democrats basically only have one, Hillary Clinton. She may have to have debates with Senator Sanders, former Senator Webb, and maybe Governor O'Malley. But they could put four Democrats on the stage pretty easy. But how do you put 10 to 15 Republicans on the stage and have a meaningful debate? And if you don't see them all at once, it's pretty difficult to make up your mind who you might want to back.
I think they gave kudos to Mr. Albrecht, who kind of did the logistics for the thing over the weekend, and he cut it. 10 minutes was it. You can't go any longer. We got too many people.
Yeah, and they had a way of enforcing that by turning off the microphone.
So, well, I know it was just something I wanted to find out your because it is the logistics of being able to put on something with that many candidates is really difficult. But we know not everybody is going to stay in the race, and but this is all that, this is part of the process we go through now, finding out who can, especially in Iowa. This is one of the great things I love about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. On February the 1st, we have the caucuses, and then a week later, they have the New Hampshire thing. And then through the rest of February, there's two other states, Nevada and South Carolina. And then you get past March the 1st, and you're going to have a whole bunch of primaries over the next 2 or 3 months. And at that point, it's pretty easy maybe to participate in New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and Iowa. You don't have to have millions of dollars in the bank to compete there, or at least to campaign there. Whether you can compete, maybe money will make a difference. But anyway, after that, and then you have several primaries in states around the same time, it's going to make a difference who's raised a lot of money and can get on television in order to compete in those states. So maybe well before I think our convention is in July. Well before the convention, July next year, we'll probably have it sorted out down to three or four people in March, and then by April we may know who the Republican nominee is going to be even before the convention.
Well, we'll follow it along, and again, we've got plenty of them to keep track of. I did get an email from a listener that wanted you to talk a little bit about the civil forfeiture laws. They know you've been taking a look at that, working on that.
Yeah.
Kind of wondering about the progress, and how is it going? Is it continuing? What are you looking at?
Do you know the background of the person that asked the question? Are they in law enforcement, or they're just some?
It's just a listener that posed the question.
Okay, and that's okay. The only reason I brought up about law enforcement, I think there's a perverse incentive in asset forfeiture now after seizure if it's actually legally taken from the person. I think a lot of law enforcement people see it as a way of getting money to give them an opportunity to do things that maybe from the taxpayers they don't get money to do. Now, there's nothing wrong with that because it can be a useful law enforcement tool. But the reason we're trying to reform it is there's a lot of times people's assets are seized when there's not a legitimacy for doing it. And we have this story of the lady up in Northwest Iowa that her bank account of $38,000 was seized. She'd run a little local restaurant on cash-only basis. She deposited the cash, usually less than $10,000, because if you get over $10,000, then the bank has to report it to protect us against money laundering. And so they thought maybe she was involved in that sort of underworld activity. So they seized it, and then she had to go to court, get it back. In the meantime, she didn't have the finances to run her business, so she shut down her business. Now, that's obviously something that's not right. Now, so we're going to allow asset seizures in the case of where it's contraband, in other words, an illegal substance. Or illegal money that you know is connected with a crime, or where a crime is, where there's people convicted of a crime. In those instances, where asset forfeiture is going to continue, but where the only other way you should allow assets to be seized is when a court says that it can. In other words, we're going to write a piece of legislation to protect people's due process under the Constitution.
Among the senators, you've been working on this as kind of a bipartisan, reforming and getting it kind of cleaned up?
There are bipartisan bills in, but we're going to start from scratch and write another bill. And it's going to be, it will be bipartisan because there's people both on the left and the right that want to reform asset forfeiture.
Okay. Did have someone else that wanted to see if you had some comments or thoughts about that train crash that occurred last week and safety features that now all of a sudden people are saying if these would have been in place, it could have possibly avoided this crash.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of it raises the question, should more money go to Amtrak, as an example? And, you wait until there's an accident to decide if more money ought to go here or there. You make decisions on a longer-range basis than that. And the extent to which we don't know exactly what caused the accident yet, I think I want to wait until we know what caused the accident. Well, we know he's going 106 miles an hour on a curve that should only go 50, but why was he going that fast? And was there something mechanically, humanly, or what caused it? I think we better wait until we get answers to those questions before we reach a decision. But remember, in Washington, more money is the answer to everything. And it can't be the answer to everything because everybody wants more money and nobody looks at how the money's spent. And it seems to me that you ought to look at how money's spent. For instance, the union contracts with Amtrak, if you're put off your job, you're going to get wages for the next 6 years, I believe it is. At least that's the way it used to be. And unless they've changed, unless we have legislated otherwise, and I don't know that we have, you know, that sort of obligations to protect jobs and the feather bedding that goes with it is not justified.
What about the transportation legislation or having a transportation bill, something? Because we really have, all we've been doing is pretty much extending what we've had. It seems like every other year we get an extension for transportation funding.
Since we have to make a decision this week, we aren't going to be able to write a six-year bill this week, so I think we're going to come up with a bill that passes the House of Representatives. We will go along with it in the Senate. It'll be a short-term extension, maybe till the end of the year, and hopefully in September, October, November, we'll write a six-year bill. That's our goal.
So, because it has been a while, and we know we've got some infrastructure issues to deal with, whether it be something like with Amtrak or railroads or highways. And I know they're still talking gas tax. I mean, I know that's one of the things that's been talked about, because the bottom line always gets to, where is the money?
Yeah. I don't think there's much support for gas tax. I don't find a bipartisan move in that direction. There's three or four senators that are working together to try to promote it, but they're not getting much support. And I think the reason they aren't getting much support is because we've had so many states increase their gas tax.
Mm-hmm. So, well, we'll keep watching to see how you figure this one out.
Yeah. One thing that we have to do, though, is we got to get more bang from the federal dollar. There's so many federal regulations now on how the federal dollar is spent on highways that it could go 30% further without the federal regulation. We've got to reduce some of that federal regulation.
I know that was one of the concerns here in the state when they were talking, or part of the debate was on the increasing the state's gas tax. Was there's requirements building a rest area right here when it really didn't need to be there. That sort of thing.
Yeah, and some state legislators told me there were millions of dollars spent on a certain rest area north of Des Moines that either didn't have to be built or didn't have to be built to those specifications that would have made it, would have saved a lot of money to build on highways.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll let you guys keep working on that. I know that's one that has been around for a while. Last week you had some things that came up. The House is working or eliminating some of the funding and some of the juvenile justice programs that, and you have been a longtime supporter on a lot of juvenile justice programs and services. Some concerns about what's in the House, or is this something that you think you'll be able to get worked out?
Well, I believe that we will be able to work it out in the United States Senate. I can't tell you at this point a compromise between the House and Senate, but I doubt if there's that much difference. And we have a very bipartisan bill in the United States Senate between Senator Whitehouse, a Democrat, Rhode Island, and myself. And I think it's we'll get that out of committee pretty soon. Now, when it'll be brought up on the floor, I think because June, July, and September have so much time spent on appropriation bills that it may not be possible to get it up right away. And if we can get the bill so it's bipartisan enough so we don't have to have days of debate on the Senate floor, I think we can pass it fairly fast, even in between appropriation bills. At least that's my hope.
I want to remind listeners, once again, we're visiting with Senator Charles Grassley this morning. If you have a question or a topic you'd like the senator to address, you can give us a call at 432-1590, and we'll put you on the air. You can pose that question to the senator. One of the things I wanted to ask about, and obviously I know this has been the hot topic that's been going on now for a little while. Well, you've got several hot topics, but TPA, the Trade Promotion Authority, and this is something I know that you feel that really is essential. We need to get this authority to be able to continue to assist the economy.
Well, I'm sure you have a very good understanding of it. I can tell from your question. There is union opposition to it, and the union opposition is that if we pass trade promotion authority, it's going to export jobs. Jobs can be exported with or without trade promotion authority. In fact, I would argue just the opposite, that most countries that we're negotiating with have higher trade barriers than what we have in this country. You know, almost now since World War II, we've had a very friendly environment for things to be imported into our country. Some people would say too much, and I would only say too much, only the extent to which other countries subsidize their exports, then we ought to enforce provisions that protect our industry if another company country subsidizes. But if it's a free market approach, willing buyer and willing seller, and there's no subsidies, then that's what we ought to have all over the world. Well, the United States has had that basically, but other countries have not had free access to their country. So if we negotiate those barriers down in other countries, it levels the playing field for our exports. And whether it's John Deere tractors at 24% or Vermeer heavy manufactured equipment at 30% or stuff a lot lighter that's manufactured by 3M in Knoxville at 40% exports, we are, and then don't forget, one-third of our agriculture, and then don't forget big companies like Principal in Des Moines and a lot of other service companies in Des Moines do a lot of exporting, and in Cedar Rapids do a lot of exporting as well. So we're an exporting state, so it's very beneficial to Iowa jobs to export overseas, and a level playing field helps us to do that. And that's what trade promotion authority is all about. It just takes Congress's constitutional power to regulate interstate and foreign commerce. And because there's 535 members of Congress, we can't, as an institution and a branch of government, negotiate with 12 other countries. We pass trade promotion authority that has strict guidelines for the president to negotiate for Congress, and that's all trade promotion authority is. It doesn't give away any of our constitutional authority, because any agreement that the president agrees to has to come back to the Congress to be approved by Congress, as any law would be. So we don't give up any of our constitutional authority to regulate interstate and foreign commerce. So we have to look at it this way. The United States has 5% of the world's population. Our market, 95% of our market, is outside the United States. So lowering these barriers to trade will help create jobs in the United States, and those jobs that are connected to trade pay 15% above the national average.
Is this one of the things that you'll continue to be working on now that you're back there this
yeah.
week?
Yeah, I think we'll get it done by Tuesday or Wednesday. And then we have two other things. One we've already talked about that has to be done before Friday, because we're not in session next week because of Memorial Day. So I'm going to have town meetings down in southeast Iowa. But in the meantime, by Friday midnight, we've got to pass the Trade Promotion Authority, the Highway Bill, and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Bill.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did anybody ask you what your thoughts were? They found the people from Iowa shipping guns over to Syria?
No, you know, I thought I paid close attention to that because I've known about Midamar, and I don't know to what extent the company Midamar is involved. But there was something about their plant was being used to ship. But I've known the leaders of Midamar for a long time. And so I didn't know any of the people that were arrested. But it really got my attention. And I'm surprised that it didn't get front page coverage in some of the national newspapers like it did in Iowa, because in the eastern newspapers, I just read maybe a paragraph or two that's in an obscure column. So I was kind of surprised about it. So none of my colleagues talked to me about it, and I was surprised because I was ready to answer a lot of questions.
Getting prepared. It is still an ongoing concern. From your position on judiciary, you're very concerned yet about foreign security and things like that.
Oh well, it gets more scary every day. What happened down in Garland, Texas, and an arrest of somebody here and somebody last week sentenced to life imprisonment. We used to talk in terms of hundreds of people that may be a threat domestically to our national security and the safety of the American people. More recently, I've heard figures in the thousands that you have to be concerned about. It's a big job for the local police and the FBI to keep on top of all that. And hopefully we give them the tools to do it. So far, they've been successful in the case of, except in the case of Boston and in the case of Fort Hood. But we have to be right 100% on law enforcement. And any terrorist only has to be right 1% of the time, and they can do a lot of damage. And so we have to be very, very concerned.
Senator, I know we're just about out of time, and do appreciate you taking time visiting with us again this week. It looks like, again, the working on Trade Promotion Authority and that transportation, highway transportation bill and things. Quickly, again, you've made your one stop, I know, or at least a part of your 99-county tour here in Boone County, but probably going to be coming back around this way again fairly soon.
Yeah, but it won't be until the July 4th break, because next time I'm going to do 8 counties down in southeast Iowa.
All right. Senator, I do appreciate you taking time visiting with us again this month. We look forward to seeing what we can do to get together and hook up again next time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Goodbye.